The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, the Purple People Eater himself, Professor Dave Chow.
Choking on shortbread. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Excellent. I just noticed that Kendra's also wearing purple, so I can't really call you the Purple People
Eater. What, you missed the memo?
I know, I didn't get the memo.
I'm wearing earth tones.
Yeah.
Okay. Two purple professors.
It's a thing, one thing. So.
Professor Plum, we'll call you both.
Sure.
What do you think about
that? I've been called worse.
Yeah, that's quite true.
Likewise.
In the dining room or whatever, you know.
Dave Chow just related to me a wonderful story where he actually is making a big order at Bucharest Grill, and one student did not place an order, and he gave up his chicken shawarma.
I gave my chicken shawarma
to her.
So the
student could have the shawarma.
And I end up having Pop-Tarts for lunch.
Oh, that's not a good trade.
I was noble.
Oh, my God.
That's sacrifice.
She was one of my better students. She deserves it.
All right.
Did she offer to split it?
Sugar high?
Oh, mind you, I had a Mountain Dew this morning for breakfast. So,
oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
I'm just a little shaky.
It's fall here in Detroit, but it feels a lot like summer since it's 96 degrees outside. Moving around to the other purple professor, it's Professor Kendra Evans.
Heidi-ho.
Heidi-ho. I saw a picture of you on Facebook from 2002. Go Tops.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, explain that one. I got to hear the story behind this.
That's our mascot. That's Big Red.
The Hilltopper. She went to Western Kentucky.
Yeah, and here's some trivia. There was some like TV show in Italy that totally copied that mascot, and they got sued for like millions of dollars because
wow.
It was 100% obvious that it was
so
copied.
So that's how you get your endowment. Okay.
Hey, wait, whatever works.
His nickname is Toppy?
I don't know. I call him Big Red.
Big Red. Big
yeah,
Red.
I call
that's
him Big
right.
Red.
That
that's
sounds
right.
A little bit more noble.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
He's just kind of a red blob.
Oh, yeah. He's not so fierce, mostly just adorable.
Right.
He's appeared on a lot of those ESPN mascot commercials
yes.
because of his natural
his
tendency toward fame. Yeah.
Yes, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
An animal?
No, it's not exactly an animal. More of just a Muppet. Red, furry-ish.
It looks like a big red grimace from what I could tell.
All right.
Yeah, that's close.
Red Grimace?
He's sort of a Red Grimace. Fuzzier,
yeah.
Fuzzier.
I'm thinking Elmo, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking.
He could be like a relative.
Currently, Professor Dan Maggio is researching what his mascot might be. Probably a cup of coffee.
Maybe, yeah. Oh, what is that?
that's it?
Him.
That's the Hilltopper.
Yeah.
Or Big Red.
All right.
In case any of you are having trouble visualizing what a Hilltopper looks like.
Especially on the radio.
Yeah.
I'm good.
So, nice how are you doing?
Good. Great. It's
deep, well, not too deep, but just deep enough into the Lego season now.
Yes, we're getting more into it, so things are getting a little crazier.
I've never seen my children more excited to do anything in their entire lives than go to robotics practice. I mean, it's just... The older one is doing the
yeah.
upper level.
It
called? Tech Challenge.
Tech Challenge, yes.
And the younger one is like just so into it, it's not even funny.
Awesome.
They get homework, and they get it done like within 5 minutes.
Homework
like,
from the class or homework from the regular school?
Homework from the robotics class, and they go home and they reflect on things they learned, and they're like, oh, we got to fill this out right now. I'm like, you've never done that before with anything else. Holy smokes.
How can
smokes.
You capture that and harness it and... turn it into something good for you, too.
I got to find a way.
You need your house.
Do we need to have them build, like, a robotic lawnmower or something like that? I mean, you know.
They do. All I can tell you is that the people running the program, I think you'd be proud, Dan, especially the robotics side, not necessarily. The middle school kids do something called Tech Challenge, which is very archaeological this year.
It is,
there's
yes.
a theme.
Yeah, there's a theme to it, yes.
So they do hydrodynamics or whatever in the robotics challenge, which is fourth graders, you know. And they sat down and talked about why water was important and how some people don't have a lot of water. And I'm like, this is not just let's build with Legos. This is real stuff. It's fun.
Yep, different components. Yeah,
yeah,
it's great.
Very, very cool. Let's see what's going on the other side of the table. Professor Joe Abbasett is here.
I am.
You know, you had the green tie on, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago.
Two weeks ago.
Water bottle lines up perfectly in my perspective with your tie. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he swapped ties in the middle of the show. Unbelievable.
No.
Blue
tie today.
You always look good, even in 96 degree heat and 100% humidity.
Probably
Holy
one of
smokes.
The last times I can wear this tie until
yeah,
next year.
That's true.
Until
You're not
summer.
Supposed to wear
it's
blue after
time.
The equinox.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Really?
Just making that
up. It's half my wardrobe.
White shoes after Labor Day.
No white after Labor Day. Yeah, that's...
The Herb Tarlick look is no longer fashionable.
Yeah, I don't think these rules are enforced very easily.
Yes, yes, but you always look very smart. You know what I mean when I say that. It's very...
absolutely essential for radio.
Absolutely essential. We are very, very lucky to have a guest panelist here with us. I want to make sure I get this right. You're still interim dean of the College of Health Professions. You're more than interim.
I'm the dean.
You're the dean.
Dean, dean till October 9th.
With capital T, capital D, right?
Yes. It's Dean Crispacini.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks. I love it.
Every single time you come to our show, we have a blast, and I can barely believe you're detailing for us how the days are numbered, but in a good way. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So January comes, and you're going to be able to do some other stuff.
Yep. Yep. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to being able to do some scholarly work that has just been in a pile on my desk that I just have not, you know, had time to do. So I'm really looking forward. I'm looking forward to doing nothing, to be perfectly frank.
That sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
You know that Sunday night feeling? I don't have it anymore.
Yeah.
That.
For a while, anyway. I'll be back in the fall.
Okay, excellent. Well, folks, this is a program. You can send us questions regarding anything. You stump the panel, you win a prize. If you don't stump the panel, why don't you win a prize there, too? You can send us questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp or find us in conjunction with much other information on Facebook. When last we left our heroes, Kimberly Richards is one of the longest current question senders, has been sending us questions from Southern California for a long time. And she sent us 54 questions.
Whoa.
All over the map. And the key thing that brings all the questions together is food. And that's pretty... actually, I was just about to say something about... I bet Professor Chow won't groan when I say the theme. Because usually when I say the theme is MASH, you're like, ugh.
I'm going to drool and short out the mic.
Yeah, you are going to go in... Well, you could start eating your Better Made barbecue
chips. That's during break.
Okay, so. Okay. Let's see what we got here. We had done, just as a warm-up, these two questions on our last show. The shape of the pasta called farfalle, the Italian translation is butterfly. That's what it's shaped like. Most people call it bow tie pasta. Which vegetable comes in varieties called snowball, graffiti, white horse, igloo, that was cauliflower? Not too shocking there. What was the first food eaten by a U.S. astronaut when they were in outer space?
Tang, yeah.
Hmm.
I was going to say frozen ice cream.
No.
Freeze dried.
Both of you were close, but that's not it. It's a kiddie. It's a kiddie staple.
Mac and cheese?
No.
Fruit roll up?
No, it's think mush.
Baby
pudding?
Food? Oatmeal?
Pudding?
Mashed potatoes.
Jello.
Not really a kid staple.
It says here it's applesauce.
Applesauce, yeah.
Oh.
Applesauce.
Oh,
okay. The very first time that human beings found out it was possible to eat, or chew, swallow, and digest in a weightless environment. Applesauce. What did 11-year-old Frank Epperson invent on a cold winter's night in 1905?
Popsicles.
You can't put your tongue
popsicles.
On the...
Oh, do not put your tongue on the flagpole.
That is a classic.
That's
scene.
A theorem.
This is a fantastic, you know, classic sort of stereotypical American story. Epperson was 11 years old when he accidentally left a glass of powdered soda and water with a mixing stick in it on his porch on a cold night. By 1923, Epperson sold the frozen pop and a stick to the public at Neptune Beach in Alameda, California. Seeing it was a success, Epperson patented the concept of frozen ice on a stick, calling it Epsicle, named after himself, later renamed to Popsicle.
Huh.
Kimberly does a really good job of researching.
Alameda, California has frozen
them? I was going to say, 1923, how did he freeze those?
Yeah.
I don't know. It must have been really cold.
In Alameda, California?
I don't know.
Maybe he moved. Maybe he lived somewhere else and then moved.
That's true.
Maybe he had them imported.
Got to give Kimberly the benefit of the doubt here, you know?
This was the summer home.
Yeah, exactly. In Alaska. They summer in Alaska. Who invented... It's sort of a charged question. Who invented cotton candy? Make the joke and you'll get it right.
Eli Whitney.
No.
That is a reasonable guess.
That was a good guess, but it's not that much of a joke.
Joke about cotton candy?
Yes. What kind of person would be really interested in inventing cotton candy?
Levi Strauss.
Not
kid? No, not a
not
kid.
A jeans maker.
Who else?
Not a kid, but a
circus. Swimming.
A clown?
Nope. Yeah.
I'm going to go out on the limb here and say somebody with hair. Oh,
I don't know.
Were they hatless?
Or without hair?
No.
Like spinning? Spun?
I'm surprised you guys aren't catching on.
I thought my Levi Strauss.
I'm surprised too.
Eli.
His name was William Morrison. He was a dentist.
Oh. Oh.
Yes. How about this, by the way? The dentist named William Morrison patented his invention by the time of the 1904 World's Fair to much success. But it wasn't until 1921 when Joseph Lescaut, an entirely different dentist, built the cotton candy machine we use today.
Wow.
Two dentists.
And dentist business have been thriving ever since.
Most of the world, for the record, calls cotton candy what? Most of the world calls it
not yarn.
Unhealthy?
actually, that's what we have.
It's like
yucky.
String thread I like or something it. Like that.
Right. They call it either candy floss or fairy floss. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right.
We're the people who call it cotton candy.
I like the cotton one.
This is pretty interesting. How many times are the beans fried in the dish known as refried beans?
Twice.
Once.
It says once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the translation from Spanish is frijoles refritos, which just means like very well fried. But when you hear re and you translate into English, you go, oh, it must have been fried twice. Yeah.
There's a Mitch Hedberg joke about that. I don't know if you guys are familiar. He goes along the lines of like, let's try frying them once. Maybe they're still good and you save some time. He's a one-liner.
Yeah.
According to the USDA, this is we're going to have to think about this one. So Kendra will get it right after everybody else guesses. According to the USDA, what's the most popular cheese in America by pounds eaten?
American cheese.
No.
Mozzarella. Cheese product?
100% mozzarella.
Wow.
Has taken the title as of 2014.
Because of pizza.
Pizza.
I really think that this is really important to say on the air. Americans per American eat 30 pounds of cheese a year, and 11 and a half of that is mozzarella.
Wow.
Cheddar is a far second at only 9.5 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, leave it up to you guys. Sorry, I'm the Canadian.
Unbelievable. Remember, for the record, this is why I love Kimberly so much, and I'm getting this question right. Since 1970, cheese consumption and availability has tripled worldwide. But what country holds the top spot for worldwide cheese consumption with 82 pounds per person per year? It's not the United States at a paltry 30.
Mexico.
It's just not Mexico, but that's a great guess.
It's got to be
Canada.
Denmark.
France.
It's a European country.
Is it like Switzerland?
England or France?
Finland.
No. I haven't heard it yet.
Switzerland.
I can get you to get it right in
Italy?
One word.
France.
If I say feta, you say
Greece.
Greece eats 82 pounds per person per year.
I thought my country's poutine intake would just overtake.
That's the Mediterranean diet.
We didn't say 80 pounds of gravy. We just said cheese.
And potatoes.
Oh, poutine.
Oh. Oh, my gosh. So in 1935, one city in the United States decided to say, we're the people who invented the cheeseburger. What city was it?
Ooh.
Well, March 5th, 1935.
Okay. Who'd be famous, like White Castle, Ray Kroc, maybe Iowa, somewhere? Dayton,
Ohio.
I was
thinking Wisconsin.
I was
Columbus.
New York City.
Florida, I think. Florida.
No, it's out west.
Really?
How dare they?
New Mexico?
Nope.
California.
Further north.
Oregon.
Mm-mm.
Colorado.
Butte. I was in Colorado.
Denver.
Denver, Colorado invented the cheeseburger.
What?
Wow.
Even though claims go as far back as 1926, a trademark for the name cheeseburger as a word was awarded to Louis Ballast of Humpty Dumpty Drive-In in Denver, California.
Humpty Dumpty Drive-In.
Humpty Dumpty. Oh, lovely.
This is really going back to, you know, how we have to explain to our younger people about the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
Ballast first registered the word cheeseburger. Before settling on cheese, though, he experimented with many other toppings because no one had ever put anything on a hamburger before. They included peanut butter and chocolate sauce.
Okay.
Classy stuff.
Wow.
What can I say? Maybe we should put something on this sandwich. You think it'll go?
That's
unbelievable. What gives marshmallows their name?
Does it have to do with who invented them?
No, not really. What does the word marshmallow mean?
Puffed.
Yeah.
No.
That's well, not what's mallow? Oh, it's from the marsh.
I'll tell you what. You guys go investigate the marsh, and we will take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
Get those bells. Yes. The University of Detroit Mercy presents Ask the Professor. On location. It's our annual picnic show, and this year we have come to Chillicothe, Ohio, at the grand opening of the academic theme park.
Don't get cotton candy on the mic, okay?
That's right. Right. Oh. It's the first academic theme park in North America, and I have with me today, that came all the way down from Detroit, we have George Pickering.
Sure, sure. Pleasure to be here, giving away degrees.
That's right.
Step well, right up, get your degree.
George is very attracted to this thing over across from us called the Diploma Mill.
Oh, which, I love it.
Strolling along beside George is Kathy Bush.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello. And this is the place, though, this Diploma Mill. You can have hot dogs with vice presidents. You can buy a degree or two. Hmm. Anything your heart desires, academically.
Well, you can win it at games, too.
And you can do that. You can do that. Oh, we're passing the casino. Let's take a look at the casino.
I'm you can win so many student credit hours and quality points in there. It's unbelievable.
Are these life experience credits?
Oh, absolutely. It is a life experience.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Sometimes it seems like a life sentence, you know, but it's really a life experience.
This is really fast.
Step right up, spin the wheel, come out with 32 hours in religious studies. Here you are.
And we're back. We are pondering the marshmallow, like many people do. Dave had said right before we took our break, from the marsh, and that basically is it. It's a mallow plant that grew in the marsh in ancient Egypt.
No kidding.
That had a very sugary sap. And if you blew air into it, it would make something that would approximate what a marshmallow is today. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you my god-awful stunt when I was in middle school?
Let's hear it.
I used to have to walk by a golf course on my way to middle school. So just for giggles, we just decided to get a couple bags of marshmallows and throw them onto the green. And just leave. That was evil. No, we just left it there. Yeah, think about marshmallows on a golf course?
I hear you.
We were evil. We were terrible, rotten little kids.
So, were you trying to trick them into thinking that's where their ball was?
No, we just did it just to see the reaction.
What did they do?
Nothing. I don't know. We had to go to school, so.
You didn't even get to see their reaction?
No, we didn't even. No, we
you
had
just
to go
knew
school.
That it was frustration?
Trouble. Yeah, it was just trouble. Just trouble.
So, Canadian fun. Eh?
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah. Nothing better to do.
Canadian fun. Yeah. Oh, that's really funny.
That's rotten, but you know, it's just. Just something to do.
Oh, good.
Awesome. All right. Are we ready?
Yes. No, but...
What, by way of 35 million pounds sold a year, is the most popular Halloween candy in the United States?
Candy corn.
M&M. Candy corn. By a long, long shot. Absolutely. 40,000 people were polled X number of years ago, and everybody came to consensus that candy corn was the most popular.
I challenge you to walk by a bowl. And not grapes.
Oh, it 100%.
Unless it's been in that bowl for about a month.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't ruin it.
How many Jelly Bellies were consumed each month at the White House during the Reagan administration? This is Joe's area for sure. How many Jelly Bellies?
18,000.
I mean, it's a weird way to ask the question because how about I put it this way? How many 1 pound bags of Jelly Bellies were delivered to the White House every month during the 8-year Reagan administration.
Oh, delivered to the White House.
Mm-hmm.
240.
It's higher.
480.
It's higher.
10,000?
481.
No, it's not 10,000. You're going to do 1,000.
5,700.
It's 720 1 pound
bags. Oh, my God. If I would have gone up by 240 again, I would have hit it right.
Now, here's
you are not paying attention.
I'm sorry, it was wrong.
For those who know their candy, so the 80s would have been the rise of the Jelly Belly, I would say. The gourmet jelly bean, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Those bags in 1980 dollars cost $4 a pound. Holy. That is $2,800 a month plus $80.
I'm sure they were donated.
During the 1980s. I'm sure they were donated.
I'm sure there's some tax.
Ronnie ate them all.
Yeah, I was going to say. There must have been some tax shuffle or something, you know. Like,
My gosh. How many official flavors does Jelly Belly currently offer?
Ooh,
128.
It's quite a bit lower than what you're saying.
I was gonna say,
51.
Yes, 50. 50 flavors.
Oh, wow. Yep. But it seems like there's that many terrible flavors.
Well, we always have to talk about Bean Boozled, if you've ever played Bean Boozled.
Those other the weird, obscure ones.
Buttered popcorn.
Where do you find those?
Exactly.
They have them.
So Bean Boozled, you can order online. It features appetizing flavors like chocolate pudding and buttered popcorn, possibly, alongside purposefully unpleasant flavors colored the exact same way, like canned dog food and rotten eggs.
Oh, I'm kidding.
And you spin the wheel, and you have to eat the color you get, and good luck if it's a bad one. I played it over Labor Day with my two sons.
And you're still laboring.
let me tell you, I got spoiled milk, and I could not eat it. A single jelly belly. I could not finish it. It was disgusting.
Oh, what did it really taste like?
It tasted, I felt like sort of a, like a buttery, sort of like filling, dairy undertone, and then just straight vinegar. I mean, that's what it tasted like. It was pretty disgusting.
I think people are losing it all around the world right now, listening to that story.
Listen to that story. It's a horrible story. Meanwhile, the kids loved it, by the way. The kids thought it was the greatest thing.
Watching
in the world.
Their dad double over in mortal agony, right?
Yeah. The instructions to the game say, be sure to have a garbage can nearby. And I'm all, what does this thing know? Let's do this. And I put this thing in my mouth. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
what
you're
have I done?
Several garbage what cans, right? Done?
Okay, so there was a special breakfast cereal introduced in 1984 by Quaker Oats, and all of the shapes in the bowl were all letter T.
But was it not Twix? Was it? It was a. I'm trying to remember what it was.
I'm shocked that you guys don't know this right off the top.
Total?
No.
84.
Letter
T. Quaker.
Everything was the letter T.
The letter T.
Hmm.
What's a tea cereal?
I can't eat.
I'm shocked.
I don't know the Quaker Oats cereal.
Mm-hmm. I don't think this cereal exists anymore because the person it's named after isn't exactly in the public eye as much anymore as they were in 1984.
Tom Thumb?
Nope.
Mr. T.
Mr. T is what the cereal was. Mr. T cereal. Man,
there was a Mr. T cereal?
Yeah, I remember that.
T's, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
He
was
the fool.
Big. Oh. He had his own show.
Literally,
it was animated. He was in Rocky III. He was in the A-Team. Unbelievable.
I didn't know he had a deal with Quaker.
Yeah. He always struck me more of a Kellogg man, you know?
Did he bank that money?
Mr. T.
He wore all that money. Wore most of it.
Yeah. What is the most popular breakfast cereal by sales in America?
Cheerios.
Cheerios. It's Cheerios.
Cheerios. Okay.
And
that's because of moms.
Shocking, not cornflakes. Can you get it? Number two.
Raisin Bran.
Cheerios beats its second place holder, we haven't named it yet, by over double the amount sold.
Captain Crunch.
Fruit Loops.
No, it's Frosted Mini Wheats.
Oh, Frosted Mini Wheats.
Yeah, wow. Frosted Mini Wheats. That's what it says
here.
Yeah,
good.
Cereal market has dropped over 30% in the last 15 years. This feels like one of your classes, Joe. 40% of them find their nutritional value to be worth less than the rigorous hassle of the mainstream act of rinsing out a bowl.
Thank you, Kimberly.
No.
Oh my
I think
gosh.
It's because those, like that the smoothie and the protein movement.
And the price.
Price.
Cereal is outrageous. Yeah.
I will not pay, except for only every once in a while,
$5.
$7 for a box of Cracklin' Oat Bran.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Do you guys remember back in the day when they used to have those smaller boxes of cereal?
They still have them.
Oh, yeah.
The ones where you can actually cut it open and
diner
the milk into them.
Right, right. They still got those. What color was replaced in 1995 in a standard package of M&M's?
Red.
In 1995?
Tan?
Oh.
Tan was
tan
replaced.
And it was replaced with blue.
Yeah, because wasn't there that... Was it the red number two? Or
that
what was
went
it?
Out, yeah. That went out
was that
for
earlier?
A while.
That was
and
when
it came
I was
back.
Growing up. There was no red M&M.
Yeah, and then it came back.
Yeah.
Red 40, I think, is what it was. It's nasty stuff.
Was it found to be
cancerous?
Mm-hmm. Just like everything else? Yeah. Just happened to stumble upon that one?
Yes.
Different from green M&Ms, which are maybe a little less cancerous, but whatever.
How many peanut and plain, two separate responses, M&Ms are there in 1 pound of the candy? Obviously, it's going to be less
one
peanuts.
Pound. Let's say peanuts in 1 pound, let's say
252.
It's lower than 252.
Kendra?
72?
I'll give it to you. It's 180 peanut M&Ms in a pound. How many planes?
So that's got to be like 200 something.
No, it's actually quite a bit higher because they take up less volume.
I would say 410.
Dense packing. 410?
Yeah. 394.
500 playing.
Wow.
Are in
wow.
the town.
No, why are you jumping in here?
Wow, that is a big
difference.
I was because I was picturing the density, and I was doing a lot of calculations in my brain.
Of the plane.
Yeah, that's you just got to guess.
Yeah,
that's a big difference.
Just about half.
That's 500. That's a lot. And a 1 pound bag.
Yeah, and one of them is way more delicious than the other.
There's several listeners, possibly several panelists, going, "I've eaten a pound of M&Ms."
I'm thinking the same. I've eaten a pound of peanut M&Ms.
I'll eat those.
And the ones with the pretzel on the inside. Oh, I love those things.
Oh my god.
I'm still thinking about just being mean and mixing my Skittles and M&Ms together just to mess with people.
That's the one on the internet where people say you're bred by Satan when you do that. That's like, that's hard stuff.
Sorry, are my cloven hooves starting to show?
Oh my gosh. What food was named after John Montague? He was an earl.
John.
A British statesman in 1729.
Wasn't the Earl of Sandwich, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he was the Earl of Sandwich.
Oh. Exactly right.
Sorry, I'm so... Mm-hmm. Not that I don't want to go there, but does anybody remember the Saturday Night Live bit? Earl of Sandwich? And then, oh, who's that one writer that used to have, that used to host the show all the time? Baldhead?
Buck Henry.
Buck Henry was the Lord and... Well, we won't go there. It's disgusting. We'll do it off the air.
Got it.
Perfect.
I can't wait.
So the background on the Earl of Sandwich is he was a prolific gambler and could not be asked to leave his card game, even to eat. So he had his servants bring him the entire meal in one thing, which became the sandwich.
I need someone to do that for me.
Yeah, that would be nice. What goes into a traditional Reuben?
Sauerkraut,
corned beef, and either Russian or Thousand Island, depending on what deli you're at.
There's only one thing you're missing.
The bread.
The bread. The rye.
Rye bread. Grilled.
The marble rye.
Yeah.
You got it. You got it.
Oh, dear.
Let's see. Made with a beef patty, an egg, and beetroots, what McDonald's burger is only sold in one country?
Beetroot.
Would
that be? You mean, would it be Asia somewhere?
China.
No, it's not. It's not Asia.
Beet.
Turkey?
No, not Turkey.
Is it in Europe?
It is not.
Beetroot.
Okay.
Brazil.
We're moving to...
It's not South America.
Africa.
It's not Africa.
Australia.
It's around Australia. It's New Zealand.
Oh.
It's the kiwi burger. Oh. How interesting.
Where's the kiwi in it? A small bird.
Wow. It was so successful in the 70s and 80s, it was added to the national menu in 1991.
I got to tell you, it comes with an egg on it. You said an egg, a burger, and...
An egg and beetroot.
Right. Mm-hmm. But egg on burgers?
It's the best. It's sinful.
It is. I would eat that.
Oh, speaking of sinful... I'm afraid it's time for us, I don't know what the segue here, to say goodbye. So, Dean Piscini.
Oh, sayonara.
Professor Avised.
We'll see you next time.
Professor Maggio.
Goodbye.
Professor Evans.
Have a good one.
Professor Chow.
See ya.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter @AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed today by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Meyer.